Oh, which is the dog? He in the window.
It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Oh boy, oh boy. Hello, hello, welcome, welcome, one and all. I'm fighting this cough with some cough drops today. I'm not 100% sure what the source of it is. Post-nasal drip, I believe, is the root cause of my coughing spell, coughing fits. I believe that not drinking enough water is possibly the root cause for the cough, because I've noticed I've been drinking a lot of beer, you see, but not as much water as usual. So I think that's the hang-up. So I'm going to try and drink more water today after I finish drinking beer. But that's not what we're here to talk about. I just was about to cough. Gosh darn it. I had to yank my headphones out. Sorry about that. Just thinking about it makes me want to cough, so I guess I shouldn't talk about it. But hello, hello, welcome, welcome. It is 1901 UTC on a beautiful May the 4th, 2023. May the 4th be with you, is what everybody says. Free comic book day in the U.S. is May 6th. It's coming up soon. Prepare yourselves and go get your free comic books. In a store, paper comic books. You can do it. Alrighty. So, if you want to hang out and talk and chat during the show, all you need to do is jump on over into Calm. How do you get there? Well, you SSH over to sdf.org. Or if you're like me right now, you go to tty.sdf.org. Go ahead and launch Calm with typing C-O-M. Then you press Enter. You press G for go to, and you type a non-radio, all lowercase, all one word. And boom. Just like that. You will be in the Anon Radio Room with all the cool people, like LD Beth. I haven't seen them in a while. Jeff, Zerohoff, or the Z-Man, you know. Quentin's here. X1's probably around. X1 did. Just joined from the lobby. This is the May. Thank you, Quentin. Hello, hello. Welcome, one and all. So, we've got Calm pulled up. We've got our music. We got our intro music played. We got people hanging out. Seems like it's time to pull up some bookmarks and go on into some news. So we just go over here to our bookmarks menu, go to our today's bookmarks. The day is the 4th, May the 4th, so let's jump on over. Oh, shucks, I forgot to organize my bookmarks. So we are going to just go in order of sites that I looked at today, as opposed to actual order of importance or anything. So we're not starting the way we always start. We're just starting, and we're going to wander through it. I hope that's okay with you guys today. So we begin with some news that I saw before I even started looking at news sites, and that's Westinghouse has announced a new small nuclear reactor, a notable step in the industry's effort to remake itself. The key points is Westinghouse announces the launch of a small version of its flagship AP1000 nuclear reactor on Thursday. The new reactor, called the AP300, aims to be available in 2027 and will generate about a third of the power as the AP1000, which will be enough to generate power for about 300,000 homes. It expects to cost about $1 billion to set up each plant, a small fraction of the expense of the full AP1000. Westinghouse is offering a smaller-scale nuclear reactor in an effort to expand access to nuclear power as demand for clean energy soars. The company announced the launch of a small version on Thursday. Westinghouse's move is a notable inflection point in the nuclear industry's effort to remake itself as a way to address climate change. Electricity generated from a nuclear fission reactor produces no greenhouse gas emissions. The AP300 will generate approximately 300 megawatts of energy, which is 300,000 homes, versus 1,200 megawatts for the AP1000. So they're saying it's a third of the size, but it produces a fourth of the energy. Anyway, smaller nuclear reactors are less expensive to build, which is a major selling point. The Vogtle power plant in Georgia is adding two AP1000s, and that project has been criticized for budget and schedule overruns. But Durham says publicized cost estimates, which have reached past $30 billion, include things like interest on money borrowed to pay for the project. Because the small modular reactors are smaller, they are also more versatile. Unlike the previous generation of nuclear power plants, which were only used by large integrated utilities, the sizes of advanced reactors, which range from micro-reactors of a half megawatt to 300 megawatts or more, means that there is a significantly larger number of utilities that can use these technologies. Small nuclear reactors are being eyed by industrial producers as carbon-free sources of heat. One of the many advanced reactor technologies, including high-temperature gas, molten salt, and sodium fast reactors, they can produce industrial-grade heat for non-power purposes, or combined heat and power applications for industries such as steelmaking, chemical production, cement production, milling and mining, among many others. So, maybe a little funny there. Oh, interesting. I just saw there's been a shopping cart on the sidewalk here, for several weeks or a couple weeks, and a white van just rolled up, popped open the back of its doors, and put it inside. So who knows? Maybe they are working for the store. Maybe not. Let's see what's going on over here in Com. Quantum news fluctuations. Small has risen to mean 300 megawatts. An AP1000 should be cheaper now that the first units have been finished. 80 megawatt electric is an attractive size, according to Publius, because that's about the size of the biggest marine diesels. Hey, you know, I think that it's pretty interesting that we've got these small modular reactors coming online around here. It's one of those things that, like, the sooner we get them online, the sooner we start making more of them, mass producing them, the sooner the price will come down. At least that's my take, or what I hope is the take of it. Alrighty, so if you didn't hear, the news does not have any order today because I forgot to structure that. So now we'll jump into some political news, I guess. Four Proud Boys have been found guilty. Four members of the far-right Proud Boys group, including former leader Enrique Tarrio, have been found guilty of seditious conspiracy for their role in the U.S. Capitol riot. The jury was unable to come to a decision on two charges against a fifth co-defendant. The verdicts came after a trial lasting nearly 4 months. Seditious conspiracy charge alone carries a penalty of up to 20 years in prison. All five defendants were convicted on a range of lesser charges stemming from their activities on January 6th. Let's see. I'm trying to get the right part. Besides the leader of the group, the other co-defendants were Ethan Nordian of Washington State. He was active in street protests and brawls in the Pacific Northwest. He was seen leading members of the group around the Capitol. Joe Biggs, 38, of Florida, is a U.S. Army veteran and former broadcaster for Alex Jones' InfoWars. He was hanging out with Nordian throughout the riot. Zachary Real, 37, was a former U.S. Marine and a leader of the Philadelphia branch of the Proud Boys. And Dominic Pozzola, age 44, of Rochester, New York. He is a former U.S. Marine and was one of the first people to reach one of the entrances to the Capitol, where he took a riot shield off a police officer and smashed a window. The jury couldn't reach a decision on charges of seditious conspiracy and conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding against Pozzola. So, there you go. It's kind of one of those weird things that you don't really think about, but surprisingly, the extremists are in our armed services. And that's kind of a weird place to be. I mean, you don't ever be like, oh yeah, I don't trust our military. And in, alright, so anyway, that's going on. Let's keep on a rolling. What else is happening from the BBC? I don't know where your money is, but hopefully it's not in one of these failed banks, because the U.S. bank shares have dropped sharply as a crisis of confidence in the country's banking sector continues. Investors, reeling from the most serious string of banking failures to hit the U.S. since 2008, are fleeing smaller lenders seen as at risk of failing. Shares in California-based PacWest plunged 50%, while Western Alliance also tumbled nearly 40%. The U.S. Treasury Department said it was monitoring developments closely. The banking system has substantial liquidity and deposit flows are stable, an official said. Meanwhile, an article I read yesterday, I don't remember if I read it on the show or not, but article I read yesterday said that like 100-something thousand of the banks in the U.S. were insolvent, technically insolvent, if they had a call. Let's see. Okay, Amid the turmoil, Canada's Toronto Dominion Bank called off a $13.4 billion acquisition of Tennessee-based First Horizon, sending its shares down by about 40%. The Canadian bank had come under pressure from investors to halt the purchase due to concerns about this industry's stability. First Horizon said it stopped the deal due to problems getting regulatory approval. Confidence in a financial institution is built over decades and destroyed in days, billionaire investor Bill Ackman tweeted. As each domino falls, the next weakest banks begin to wobble. Along with rate rises, U.S. mid-sized banks, including PacWest, have been struggling due to investor fears over their loans to venture capitalists who have heavily invested in technology firms. So, there you go. So, that's what's going on in your banking world. Check in on Calm here real quick. What sentencing does a racist and a traitor get nowadays? And Publius is keeping his money in a credit union. Long-term low-interest assets. That's what LCD's pointing out. People do panic, pretty much. That's what causes a lot of our financial instability. I don't know. I have money in my... I have a local account in my local credit union, and I have an account in One United Bank, which is this black-owned bank that's wholly online that I use. And it's like those kind of things align with my beliefs. But it's also one of those things where I get kind of nervous. I'm like, Bank of America is looking a lot more. It's like, maybe they murder people. Maybe they cause harm in all the world. But will they have my money? Ultimately, in the U.S., unless you've got more than like 250 grand in one account, you probably don't got to worry about it anyway. All right. What do I know? I'm not a financial guy. Let's keep on a moving. Let's talk about, drugs. No, the good kind of drugs. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has approved a vaccine against a respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV, an illness that kills thousands of Americans each year. The vaccine still needs approval from U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention before it can be rolled out to the public. Officials say the vaccine, named RXVY by the manufacturer GSK, is a major breakthrough that will save many lives. It could be available to people over 60 within months, officials say. Today's approval of the RSV vaccine is an important public health achievement to prevent a disease which can be life-threatening, said Dr. Peter Marks, who leads the Center for Biologics Evaluation and Research at the Food and Drug Administration. So that is a little bit of excitement, good news, I guess you could say, for people who are at risk from RSV. Oh, yeah, here's a banking thing. Regulators stepped in for PacWest and Western Alliance. Yeah, those are the two companies we talked about. This is why I didn't get a chance to clean up my bookmarks. I got distracted with work. One of the guys here at the office, he was having issues. What is it? Anyway, there's a guy at work and he had to take leave. And it's funny because him and I, we both worked on the same team, I don't know, a decade ago. And so we manage these servers in this server, this secured lab, right? Well, I've moved on to a different job. He moved on to a different job. But no one ever moved in like that. The jobs we were in just dissolved. They don't exist anymore. But there's all this equipment that's still in this lab that needs to be maintained. And so he kind of has been the one stuck working on it. But really, we've told everybody that lives in there, hey, there's nobody here that's actually maintaining this. You need to move out. And so I had to go in there because there's a whole four systems that are still in there that, still four systems. Anyway, I got stuck troubleshooting some unexpected powering off of these systems. It messed me up, so I'm sorry about this. Discordant show. Speaking of money, this was an article that I thought was relevant to us and was in a Singapore newspaper, not an American newspaper, which I thought was neat. Most Americans do not have the financial resources to cover a surprise expense of $400 without taking on debt, according to a new survey. Just over a third of respondents said they have cash on hand to cover the expense, and the figure rises to 48% when it includes those who said they would use a credit card but would pay it off immediately before incurring interest charges, according to a poll conducted by decision intelligence company Morning Consult for Bloomberg News. Among the remainder, most said they would borrow via cards or some other kind of debt to meet the expense, while 17% said they would not be able to pay it at all. The data highlights widespread financial fragility, even in an economy with unemployment at near 50-year lows, and the erosions of the savings cushion that some households built up during the COVID-19 pandemic. It also shows how many Americans could be pushed into taking on more debt, even as interest rates surge, by a relatively commonplace event, like the need to repair a car, or an appliance, or a medical bill. We've had two really strong years of jobs growth, and there's been a lot of coverage of wage compression, with lower-income earners actually experiencing more rapid wage growth, said Mr. John Lear, chief economist at the Morning Consult. And despite all of that, he said, there's still a group of predominantly lower-income adults who are extremely vulnerable. About 20% of the middle-income bracket, who get paid between 50 and 100 grand, said they could not cover an expense with cash or equivalents. The figure was 8% among those who make more than 100,000. The poll results are similar to the U.S. Federal Reserve Survey of Household Economics and Decision-Making, known as the SHED Survey. The poll shows that emergency expenses are not that uncommon. So, let's see. Publius points out, lots of employers are assuming they can have fewer employers that do more work. And the North Texas NPR station did a series of reports called One Crisis Away. Yeah, it's pretty bad out here, because while there's more people getting jobs, those jobs don't pay anything, or they pay really poorly. It's that wage compression. So in the past, whenever there was low unemployment, it meant everybody had a job and they were getting paid enough to live. But now it just means you have a job, but I don't know. At least here in Austin, it's crazy. You can't really afford an apartment by yourself unless you're making a decent amount of money. And it's, you know, you don't have to make 100 grand to afford an apartment in this city, but you definitely need to make, if you're going to live by yourself, you want to be, 60 or more, probably 70 something, which is crazy. It's way higher than anybody working in a restaurant would make. All right. Okie doke. So that's what's going on there in Moneyland. Kind of a bummer, of course. Sorry about that. But it's not as big of a bummer as all the death and destruction news we usually talk about. So let's go to Africa for a second. The Pope has defrocked a priest. Pope Francis has sacked a 64-year-old clergyman of Rwandan descent when Salas Munyashika, who had been serving in northern France for close to 30 years. Oh, I thought this is from Africa News, so that's why I got it mixed up. Or I guess because he's Rwandan. The Bishop of Evreux issued a communique which has been circulating online, stating that Munyashika is excluded from continuing to serve as a priest anywhere else and automatically loses clerical rights. The authenticity of the communique was confirmed by the Office of the Diocese of Evreux to the BBC, and it was revealed that the decision was based on a papal decree dating back to March. Munyashika, who fled to France following the Rwandan genocide in 1994, has not commented. In December 2021, he was suspended by his diocese after it was revealed he'd allegedly acknowledged fathering a 10-year-old boy. Of course, that means that he had sex 10 years ago, not that he, like, cloned a 10-year-old. Courts in France have cleared him of the genocide charges, so I guess that's good. At least this priest didn't commit genocide, but he did have a child, so hopefully that takes care of that. Okay, we talked about Westinghouse. Check this out. The Great Lakes Clean Hydrogen Hub, or GLCH Coalition, has submitted a full application for funding under the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act to create a nuclear-powered clean hydrogen hub to serve Ohio, Michigan, and parts of Pennsylvania and Indiana. The group's application sets out details of a USD $2 billion plant to create a clean hydrogen hub, which will use nuclear power from Energy Harbor's David Bess plant in Ohio to produce clean hydrogen at a competitive cost. The project has a well-defined scope, is commercially feasible, and will use proven production technologies to minimize the time required to achieve full production of more than 100 tons of hydrogen per day. The hydrogen it will supply will help major industries across the Midwest to decarbonize, as well as serving the hydrogen needs of a growing mobility market, including trucking, transit, buses, rail, aviation, and marine, and will benefit local communities through stakeholder engagement, job creation, and workforce partnerships. It's going to use electrolysis to produce hydrogen. They're also going to use nuclear and solar projects under development in the region. The hydrogen will be distributed across the Great Lakes region by pipeline and road. Total project investment is expected to exceed $2 billion, with 50% requested from federal infrastructure funding under the U.S. Department of Energy's Clean Hydrogen Hub Initiative. So we'll see how that works out. Ooh, some dark clouds rolling in. We'll see how that works out. It is exciting to see more hydrogen and more nuclear on the roadmap. A lot of questions remain on when we're going all to electric cars. The infrastructure is not really there for all electric cars. So what alternative fuels could we maybe use? It's kind of interesting. Let's see what we got here in com. Mother Trucker coming from Claudio. During the Great Depression, you had crops rotting in the fields and people starving in the cities. It takes an incredible level of sophistication to achieve such an awful result. Well said, Publius. Let's see. The owners of David Bess were threatening to shut it down as an uneconomical, and it should be deeded over to the Case Western Reserve Engineering School for a dollar. So I guess that's why this nuclear plant needs to be used for some hydrogen. Not necessarily a bad idea. Oh, man. I want to take a minute and remind you, we've got about 8 minutes, 7 minutes, and some change before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe, a show that airs every goddamn day at 19:30 UTC, right here on Anon Radio. Yesterday, I ordered 40, that's right, two 20-packs of Anon Radio stickers, and I'm going to stick them up all over town. Anywhere I go, I'm just going to stick them up. I never got my Anon Radio pin for being a DJ on Anon Radio, but so if anybody did, let me know, because I'd be cool to see one of those. I ordered one from the store, so that should get here sometime in the next quarter or so. And then once I get them, I'll be sure and post more pictures all of where I'm hiding or sticking these stickers. But yeah, stick around. 1930 UTC, Dubious Goals. It was marmot extravaganza this week. Lots of cool Mati sightings and good Mati photos. Very much fun. Lots of cool stuff. No. In Horrible Ways to Die, a security guard was buried alive after a landslide in Kuala Lumpur. The security guard died after being buried alive in his guard post after a landslide near Taman Saputa in Kuala Lumpur on Thursday. The City Fire and Rescue Department Operation Control Center said it was alerted to the landslide at 12:54 a.m. On a statement, they said, "We were informed a person was trapped under the soil. We immediately dispatched fire engines, rapid intervention motorcycles, and other assets, together with K-9 units and 37 personnel members." Operations Commander Mode Rizwan Razali said that the first rescue unit arrived at the scene at 1:05 a.m. and found the landslide had occurred and buried a security post. The affected area spanned at least 6 meters by 12 meters with a depth of 3 meters. We also received information that an adult male security guard was buried under the soil. So no word on how they dug him out, but apparently they found him dead once they did. So kind of a bummer there. Always stinks when someone dies on the job. You know, it's like, Speaking of dying on the job, several teachers were killed in Pakistan. What do we got here? Gunmen stormed a school in Pakistan's volatile northwest, killing several teachers and gunning down another teacher from the school in a separate attack. In Kurram, a district in the northwestern
Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province that borders Afghanistan. A group of gunmen on Thursday stormed a government school where the students were taking exams. The 7 teachers killed were members of Pakistan's minority Shia community, which is frequently targeted by fighters. Another teacher from the same school, a Sunni Muslim, was gunned down on the road in a separate attack earlier in the day in Khurram. I'm going to cough now. Goodness gracious. Goodness gracious. So sorry about that. It seems to be a sudden onset. I'll be talking, and then this very strong urge comes over me, and I have to, like, cough. Sorry about that. Publius played a clip of Star Wars music while I was coughing. I did turn my head to the right. I am up against a wall. I bet you if I sit a certain way, let's see, can I get my balls to the wall? Well, if I had a hole in my pants, probably. Close enough. As close as I'm gonna get at work. All right. Well, we've got about 4 minutes to go. Let's see if I've got any more stories here for us. And again, I'm sorry for being out of order today. We're still doing it though. Bow, bow, now, 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 now. The window? Oh, the window and the walls. There are no windows here on the parking garage, unfortunately. Let's talk about this. The HALT Act in New York. 1 year after... New York's HALT Solitary Confinement Act took effect, incarcerated people and advocates have filed suit against the Department of Corrections and Community Supervision for failing to comply with the law. In 2021, after nearly a decade of advocacy efforts, state lawmakers passed Correction Law 137, better known as the HALT Solitary Confinement Act. HALT limits solitary confinement to 15 consecutive days or 20 days within a 60-day period. If a person's punitive sentence exceeds 15 days, the person must be transferred to a residential rehabilitation unit, which is supposed to provide more out-of-cell time and group programs. The HALT law also bans even short-term solitary for people with serious mental illness and other vulnerable groups. If fully implemented, the HALT solitary law would transform its prison system and free thousands of incarcerated people from torturous isolation. Prisons are highly change-resistant institutions, and implementation of the law may present an even bigger challenge than its passage. What happens in New York may have national impact, since the HALT law becomes a model for advocates seeking to limit the use of solitary in their states. Within the past 2 years, 8 other states have introduced similar legislation. They're often called Mandela bills, after former political prisoner and South African President Nelson Mandela, who spent 18 years in solitary confinement, which he described as the most forbidding aspect of prison life. The United Nations adopted the Mandela Rules for the treatment of incarcerated people in 2015. The rules recommended that solitary be used as a last resort, not a first response. 2 months after New York passed HALT, Connecticut became the 3rd state to legislate limits on its time in isolation. So far, advocates and currently formerly incarcerated people say there has been a serious discrepancy between the law's passage and its implementation. As more information emerges, including personal accounts from incarcerated people, advocates are learning that continued vigilance is needed. HALT is in the implementation process. We'll continue to watch and make the necessary moves to right any wrongdoing. So we'll see what's going on there, but I just wanted to bring attention to that because it's something that I think is really weird. You know, the U.S., it's kind of like everything else in the U.S. It comes down to making money. Prisons aren't really about rehab or punishing people anymore. It's just a way, since privatized prisons are allowed, just a way to make money. Anyway, enjoy the Dubious Bills Committee.
Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe. at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.